raising black children in the United States can be really scary. And as a black mother, I realized I was parenting from fear. And I wanted to make a commitment to parent for liberation. You are listening to Parenting for Liberation podcast. And I am your host, Trina Green Brown. Each month, I'm joined by other black parents and we discuss our own journeys to push past our fears so that we can raise our beautiful black children to be whole, free, and liberated.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping.
Hey, y'all, this is Trina with Parenting for Liberation. And on this episode, we are speaking with my good friend, my sis, Naima Afia, a holistic health practitioner and a healer within the ancient and future traditions of the African diaspora. She works and has a commitment to healing amongst BIPOC folks. She does it through a variety of techniques and traditions and modalities, from yoga to immersive healing retreats. Also, shout out, P4L is collaborating with Naima on a healing retreat in Costa Rica. So if you're interested, we'll give you more info in the notes on the show. But anywho, Naima's here. She is a proud Mama G to toddler twins who are too cute, if you don't follow her on social media, to see outfit of the day with their quacks. Anywho, Naima's here and is also supporting Parenting for Liberation with some healing work on the Innovation Lab. So we have so much to talk about around healing and parenting and mothering and the uber laborious but also super joyful role that we have as mamas. So welcome to the podcast, Naima.
Thank you so much. I feel like you and I are just always on a pause. Whenever I'm not talking to you, I feel like it's just a pause from the last conversation that we didn't get to finish. So it feels great to be back in conversation with you.
Yes. I was actually thinking about starting our conversation with like, how did we meet? What's the first time we met? And I believe, and I'll be messing up with this situation with other people. Like, I have other friends that I'm like, didn't we meet at this conference or didn't we meet at this thing? And they're like, girl, I met you 2 years before that. And I'd be like, my bad. So I believe... I believe we met in Montgomery. Shout out to the Montgomery melee that happened with the folding chairs.
Holler.
That's where we were. That's where we met. We met there, right?
At the water. Not at the water, but we were adjacent. We were water adjacent.
We went to the water. We were on those docks together, and we've been locked in ever since. And in that space, Naima will tell you, if I ask her to tell you, so we're going to be transparent here. In that space, I remember being at a conference. Naima was working the conference and supporting in the healing justice capacity. I was a facilitator at the conference. And I showed up late to the conference because I was having like personal turmoil in my life. I had just lost a family member and was dealing with that. And I showed up, and I probably showed up hella exhausted, hella drained, and just tired as hell. But I still felt like I had to show up. My son was with me. Pawpaw was with me. So I didn't just show up as the conference as a facilitator. I still showed up at the conference as a mama and a facilitator and all the other things, right? As a person, a woman who's grieving a family member who was just transitioned, right? Mm-hmm. And so that brings me like to our topic that we're going to be talking about. Is just like, I don't even know what to call it. I feel like I've been talking about it for months, even on the podcast from last episode. If you haven't checked it out with Dr. Raquel Martin, we talked about like the black superwoman trope and like how we have to heal ourselves in order to show up for our kids well. And I feel like I keep having this conversation because, y'all, I don't got it right. I still be burning myself out and running and running and running. So, Naima, do you remember meeting me?
Of course I remember meeting you. Not only because you're cute, and I'm always like, who's this cute human coming in the space?
I try.
And because you are one of those people who, when you show up in the room, everyone's hyped that you're there. So I was like, oh, who is this person? Everyone's really excited that this person's here. But I do remember meeting you and having intentional time with you. And I do remember being really impressed and also really having tons and tons of empathy for how much you were holding at that time. And I was, you know, admiring you and also just wanting to like wrap you in love and nourishment and comfort and like kick everything out of your way and be like, can everyone just leave this person alone for like the next 18 to 24 hours? Because I felt like you deserved that and you needed that. And I didn't know if it was even going to be possible or available to you.
And I don't even know if I would have, I don't know if I would have known that I needed it. Because as a Black woman in American society, as a mama, you're supposed to do, you're told, society tells us we're supposed to do all the things, do it well, and not ask for help. Mm-hmm. We're not supposed to need help. So I was exhausted. And so I think we're going to be talking about tonight just like about exhaustion. And you're a fairly newer mama, Mama G, but you've been working with folks for years who, and you've been in a parenting community, right? Like, even though you're not, maybe weren't a parent directly biologically, we are in a community collective, right? So you've been with the parents, you've been the auntie, the tia, all the things, you've been the family friend, I'm sure you got guy kids, all the things. So just thinking about the role of, in particular, single Black mothers, right? Mm-hmm. And the ways that we don't get breaks often, and we're carrying the load of like working while caregiving, like just the double labor. In your opinion, what are the ways that, and I'm saying all this because I feel like I wouldn't have taken a break. Like I just would have been like, oh yeah, I could do it. Just, I could show up. I could do all the things. And I always feel like I could do all the things and just push through. But how or why, and what are the ways that the exhaustion of Black mothers, Black single mothers has been just so normalized? Like, that's just what you're supposed to do. Like, mm-hmm. You chose to have kids, so do all the things. That's mm-hmm. what you chose. Mm-hmm. What you think about that? Because you be getting that too.
Sure, I be getting that. And I also remember experiencing that from the other side when I was not parenting, or when I was in a different orientation to parenting, and I was holding space with people who were parenting and feeling hopeless, being someone who like wanted to create respite, you know, like wanted to create respite and support for single or solo parents, and feeling really hopeless because it felt like an impossible feat because of how much was on their plates and how much they were expected to step into. And there was like, there's no algorithm that you could apply to this massive quantity of responsibility and expectation that would actually free this person up from the level of oppression that comes, you know, through the expectations for single Black moms in particular, I would say. And it's normalized, but I feel like it's more than normalized. I feel like it's actually been built into the history of this country. You know,
speak like, on it.
When we think about, you know, you talked about the superwoman trope for Black women. I always go to the mammy trope, right? Because it's still very much ingrained in people's, you know, psyche, in their, I'm just going to leave it at psyche, and hopefully you could edit out all that and pause.
We leaving it in there.
but it's been ingrained into our psyche that Black women, Black mothers in particular, are expected to hold everything and sacrifice everything, including their own children, right? Like the expectation when we came to these shores, when we were brought to these shores, was that we would give our children, we would give our labor, we would give our uteruses, we would give our bodies. We became objects of sexual exploitation. We became objects for physical exploitation. We became objects for financial exploitation, for psychological exploitation. Like, there is no corner of exploitative and oppressive behavior that does not touch the identity and the identity politics of a Black mother. And we've been single and solo Black momming since we got off them ships, you know, like, because we were separated from our families and our communities. And we were stripped from that ancient tradition of communal care and communal kinship for rearing and raising children. So so it's beyond normalization. It's actually like institutionalization, it's indoctrination, it's psychic warfare, in my opinion. Like, I feel like we have to actually be doing like battle to get some of those false ideologies out of our psyche. And I think also, like, it's not even just about normalization, it's like it's invisible. Right? Like, there's also this kind of like unspoken agreement, or I don't know what's just like, act like it's not happening. Like everyone's kind of like doing, it's like before racism became sexy and everyone was just like, we're just going to look the other way. Like, it's not happening. We just going to act like that person didn't just get murdered by the police. And then all of a sudden it got sexy, like to care about Black lives got cute and became trendy. And then people had to stop acting like racism wasn't, you know, wasn't a thing. And I feel like people do that with Black motherhood. They treat it like it's not a severe and exhausting and violent at times and oppressive, human condition. It's not a state of affairs that is within our human reality of what we can do and what we should be holding.
I mean, I think you brought up so much, right? Like from the mammy trope to our arrival here, us being forced to come here and be labor for other people, right? You're talking about us and our humanity not being seen. Like, literally, we're not humans. We are workers. We are to be bred. We are to work. We are to toil the land. We are to take care of other people's kids. We are to be wet nurses. Like, nothing was for us or our children, right? It reminds me, as you were talking about, it reminds me of Miriam Kaba's work around Black women's inability to defend themselves, right? Like, she has this work that she's doing, like, no selves to defend. Like, our existence, because we were never human, right? We were never seen as human in this country. Like, when we are trying to defend ourselves or show up in self-defense, like, actually, we don't even have selves to defend, right? We have been deemed unworthy or less than human. And so how that trope then allows people to see us struggling as mothers and be like, this is what everybody normally says. It's like, well, you chose to be a parent.
Right.
So it's like this very much like victim blaming situation. Like, oh, because you made this choice, it's your responsibility. But it's like, but we all say we care about the future and raising the next generation, and we care about the legacy that we're leaving behind. And it's like, if we only see the sole person responsible for children as the mother, then like, what is the role of the other humans in that child's life? Like, what is their role? And like, what happened to the village mindset? What happened to community? What happened to collective? We have been so disconnected from that.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about the impact of that, right? The impact of feeling like, I'm gonna just say this as someone who's formerly married, who had a partner, that it don't even only happen to the single mamas. Like, I think that's the other thing that happens, is that they pit us against each other. Like, oh, well, you should have kept that man. You should have went back. Like, they're all this thing, like, if you would have stayed together and all that. And it's like, even the mamas who got co-parents in the home sometimes are still feeling this level of stress. So why do you think, I'm like, if the tables were turned, I'm curious how it would happen if men were responsible for all of this labor. Like, would it be the same? Because I feel like there's a very significant way or specific way that, because it is mothers, that it's like glossed over or it's like expected. So,
totally.
So let's add in, you know, we talked about racism. Now let's just add in the patriarchy and sexism to the conversation, shall we?
Yeah. And, you know, the heavy hitter that sits on top of everything always of capitalism, right?
Shmoney.
So what are the people doing if they're not taking care of the babies? They're doing some sort of industrial activity that's going to get them some sort of capitalistic profit and keep them in the competitive seat in the capitalist market. And that's actually what the powers that be want for, you know, the minions, so to speak, you know, the people who they don't
respect. Like the regular degulars who don't own it, who are like working to make sure that the wealthy stay wealthy.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's systematic. That disconnection from community, that expectation that the mammy continues across generations, that beyond trope, but now what people believe is like an artifact that maintain, that is all to lift and hold up patriarchy and capitalism and of course sexism. And I think misogynoir in particular, which touches the reality that like Black women can't turn anywhere without some sort of oppression, but busting us upside the head. You know, like we can't get away from the marginalization of being women. We can't get away from the marginalization of being Black. We can't get away from being objectified and hypersexualized, which is also a continued product of the transatlantic slave trade and the Industrial Revolution that followed. And I think that's like, it's important to also acknowledge that under capitalism, there's a pretty specific algorithm by which a person's worth is determined. And I think that the inside of the algorithm, there is a very serious commitment to Black women and Black mothers' worth being attached to how heavily they subscribe to the mammy trope. So how selfless and good of a housekeeper they are, how selfless and good of a servant they are, how selfless and good of a cook they are, how selfless and good of a wife or a sexual partner or et cetera, they are. And, you know, I think it's a very particularly Western experience where like our morals get quantified into this like false value system of capitalism, and parenting becomes this like site of moral, this like kind of moral high ground. And so this thing happens, I'll say all that to say, this thing happens whereby Black women are considered immoral if they are not subscribing to this mammy trope. And the more you deviate from it, the more you are looked at as a person who's not holding a moral, a certain level of moral high ground and should be respected and have your dignity taken seriously.
I think that that's that when you become the Jezebel. You become the Jezebel or the other tropes because you're not falling in line with this one.
Correct.
But also, correct. I think the interesting thing about it all, right, is that they made the mammy trope sexy or popular, something that people then now strive to be, but we would never say I'm trying to be the best mammy ever, but we're trying to be the, you know, the Black superwoman, the like, I can do all things, I don't need nobody, I'm independent, you know. It's like there's this way that that conflates the mammy of being like the best of all, the taking care of, like the super duper caregiver, then becomes like a badge of honor because it is a moral thing, right? Now I want to be the best mother, the best wife, the best this, and I want to also be a professional woman and make money and earn income. You know, I want to be the boss. I want to be the boss in the streets and a lady and all those things, right? It then leads to this thing that we're all now like performing under without knowing that we're performing under something that was created to strip us of our humanity.
Correct.
So,
and the obligation, the obligation or the expectation is that we subscribe more heavily to the service and needs of other people than we do to our own. The expectation is that we abandon ourselves in order to maintain a certain level of moral value and upstandingness. So, you know, our value is tied up with how much we can be away from ourselves, with how much we can abandon our needs and how much we can center or prioritize other people and other industries, anybody else's needs but our own. And I think that that's essential, actually. I think that's like one of the most essential components of this whole, you know, systemic algorithm that I keep kind of calling it, this matrix kind of blue pill, red pill situation that we're in, which is that like, if we were to actually acknowledge the totality of a Black woman, a Black mother's needs, and how significant her lived experience is, and how significant her contribution is, and how much support and resource she should have, then we would have to flip the way society functions in total. So we couldn't
hold. Dang, you ready for that?
You know, capitalism definitely doesn't have time for that. It doesn't have time to like make space and money for Black mothers. It doesn't have time to like flip the standards of performance, beauty, care, and put it into a pocket that actually allows for our well-being. But I think ultimately what would happen is we would upend these systems. If they actually gave us what we need to fully be in our power and to be in our humanity, these systems would crumble. They would buckle.
I mean, I feel like they have to buckle in order for us to. I don't think the system is going to readily hand it to us. I think we're going to have to actually dismantle the system to make it happen. So then it makes me wonder, like, what do we need to do? When I say we, like, I mean, maybe this is just like for all the single mamas out there, you know, I'm about to be singing the Fantasia song, B-A-B-Y-N, all the baby mamas out there. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like it's not only like white folks or non-Black folks who believe that we're supposed to do this. Like everyone subscribes to this belief that we're just supposed to do it all. They could be our partners, our husbands, our lovers, our mothers, our aunties, the grandmamas in them. Like, oh, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. Like, that's your responsibility.
Our lives come with a mandate to servitude.
Yeah. And so, like, if we want to disrupt that or step away from that, there's so much, like, shame, Like, oh my gosh, you're not a good mom. Like, oh, you let the dad be the primary caregiver. Like, what kind of woman are you? It's like, listen, honey, child, that baby was doing, the daddy wanted to tell me what to do. Let the daddy do it then. You know, like, it there becomes like this attack when Black women try to deviate from that and say, actually, no, what we need is support. They, you know, it reminds me of that video that I shared with you that you posted of the single mama who was like, I don't know, maybe a group of like, maybe I need to find another a mother that I can co-parent with and we could do this together because we should not be doing this alone. And folks, you know, in the comments were just trolling like a mug. Like, and the people who are commenting and trolling are Black folks. So it's not like this is outside of our community. We got to deal with this even in our own community. Like, why is there so much? Why do you think our own community is trying to, like, push us down? Why are they so much buying into the trope so much?
I think there's a false sense of safety that comes through it. You know, like, that was part of the Willie Lynch doctrine, was, like, make the Black men believe that their safety is built on the dehumanization and the exploitation of the Black woman. So I think there is, like, a false sense of safety that gets created inside of our subjugation. And so I think, I mean, for some Black folks, I mean...
We're not talking all.
Yeah, and I mean... the question again was...
Well, why do you think that our community is so is also so caught up in expecting this and perpetuating this against Black women, especially when there's like all this, like, we love Black women, Black mamas, all the men, oh, they love their mamas, Mother's Day, go yay. But then it's like simultaneously when a Black mama says, I'm overwhelmed, I need help.
Well, you know, my answer to everything is trauma.
I thought you were like, white supremacy.
But that too, which is another form of trauma. But let me contextualize that in saying that we have not had access to the resources or enough conditioning and permissions to address our psychic well-being and the amount of traumatic damage that has been done to us over centuries for us to actually disrupt a lot of these false notions and these false constructs and doctrines that live in our psychic space and in our social conditions. Like, I think a big part of why we can't get free is because we're actually in so much pain. Like, I think the place where we still are actually in shackles is in our psyche, is in like the deepest recesses of our minds. And I think it feels like a wasteland, like trying to actually do something about that. Like, what, going out into the desert, like trying to find water, like, how do I heal 400 years of trauma? You know, like, how do I actually take care of this? How do I take
ongoing
care of the
fact too.
That
when... It's like historical and ongoing, still happening to this day.
Correct. Yeah. So I think what that woman did in that video is actually one of the essential components of what we need to do. And I call it lifting the veil. I think we have to actually, the same way when Black Lives Matter broke, all you could see was like constant footage of how the police murder us and it was buried in people's face. It gave people no choice but to deal with the reality of what our lived experience is. Nobody really spent too much time worrying about what it has been, which was interesting. People were really in a contemporary state of mind about that, which I think made it very easy for them to dispose of the trend when they got tired of it. But that's not the point of today. But I think what she did was really like one of the most powerful tools and weapons that we have. And like, shame is a psychosocial weapon. It's something that's used against us so that we do not use tools in our arsenal, like communal relationships, kinship care and connectivity, truth telling, storytelling. So when she told her truth, her whole truth, and was like, this is messy, this is hard, I got a raw deal. It's something that every person needs to hear. And I think it's hard for Black people to hear because then they have to touch the trauma of what their development was like, right? Because a lot of Black folks were raised by Black mamas. And so that meant that they were also absorbing the unrealistic, dehumanizing conditions that their mother was experiencing, which led to how their mother parented them, which was oftentimes in harmful ways or in confusing ways or intoxicated ways, or you know, the list goes on. So I think part of the disconnect or the challenge for people is that to acknowledge our trauma is to acknowledge their trauma. And people don't have the tools or the readiness for that.
No, they don't.
Black people in particular have a different kind of mandate inside of that, because to look at our trauma is to look at our ancestors' trauma and to look at the future generation's trauma. We can't just heal in this moment. We have a backwards and forwards healing happening at the same time.
Ooh, you said a lot, because it's true. I don't think that we have the tools or the resources to peel back the veil or peel back, you know, the little Band-Aid that we've been using to cover up deep, deep, deep wounds, you know. Mm-hmm. I think some of us are on that healing journey. Some of us are doing the work to break generational curses. And even that is freaking exhausting. Okay. And so because of that, you make me feel like there's no hope. Give me some hope. I need a little hope. You know, it is trauma. I feel like it is about trauma. And it's like, in order for me to acknowledge your hurt and your pain, there's a connection to your hurt and pain that connects to mine. And if I'm not ready to feel mine, and I've told myself that I'm fine, I was raised by a single mama who was blah, 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 but I got a whooping, I got beat, like whatever, but I'm good. It made me better. Right. So then when you complain about your experience, and you got to shut up and suck it up, because I'm fine. And guess what their favorite word is? I'm resilient. And look at how much I've been able to accomplish even with all that trauma, right? And so then the trauma becomes a badge of honor to be like, look at what I made it through, and you could do it too. And then we just kind of brush on over, and we plow through. We plow through healing just to get to and we survived. But I think what we're talking about is, we all can survive. Many of us can survive. Some of us can't survive under those conditions. But beyond survival, we're trying to create conditions where we are thriving as community. And that means that folks are being able to take care of their needs. And Black single mamas are having a hard time being able to, take care of their needs, let alone be able to show up well for our children and in our professional lives and all the other ways that we show up in the world.
I'm going to respond to that question from a deeply personal place, from a spiritual place, and also from the informed position of my skill set and my expertise. But it is mostly going to be a deeply personal answer, which is we have to go home. We have to go back to the places where our people were stolen from. And that might sound woo-woo to some people, but I'm going to tell you, in 2019, I went to Ghana for the first time. And I was broken in ways that either I had acknowledged, but I was not rigorously working through, or I hadn't even acknowledged because the pain or the wound was too deep. But that land and those people offered a type of balm and a salve for those wounds that I could go into them. And I could actually start looking at them and being with the complexity of my humanity. And I had a mirror of what it looked like to do that work, because the people in that cultural context don't live inside of white supremacy and capitalism in the same way that we do in the West. They have, because they're quote unquote third world, they have no choice but to remain inside of communal living conditions and communal care circumstances. And they still hold children in their culture and in their societies in a very particular way, because they don't have the luxury of erecting institutions where they can shove the children off to for hours and hours of the day. And there's just a different way in which family is valued. And I went to Ghana and I saw the way people look out for Black mothers. And we're still out there doing a lot. It still looks like the most difficult job in the world. And I still believe that it is. And there was a soft place for Black women to land. And sometimes that soft place was with their child in their arms. And that just doesn't exist here. And if it does, it's in these very radical or transformative spaces that we're trying to hold down or maintain or wedge in between our efforts to survive capitalism. But I mean, I have to say Sankofa, go back and get it. So even if you can't get across the ocean to go back to the places across the diaspora where we were stolen from, find those cultural conditions and contexts where they are in the United States. Because there's a lot of people who migrated here in the past 200 years who are still very loyally and committedly living inside of those social cultural practices and contexts. We just have to have an investment in their lived experience, and we have to be able to disconnect ourselves a little bit from our reality under capitalism so that we can see the value in their lived experience. So I went to Ghana. I had a little bit of a spiritual transformation. I had a reawakening. I had a healing. I had a breaking. I had a rebirth. And then I got pregnant. And then I was able to have my babies because something fell away from me that could not be taken off my spirit in this country, on this soil that was built on my ancestors' blood and bones.
I also went to Ghana in 2019. We did not go together.
No. It was a big year of return.
It was the big year of return. I'm so glad I was able to go. And I would just say, like, that resonates a lot in terms of reconnecting Sankofa, going back and getting it, going back and fetching the learnings from our people. And I did, you know, I went there, and of course I was thinking about, I was still working, child, even though I was there on a healing retreat, because Parenting for Liberation is one of my babies. And so while I was there, I actually met with Black parents there, African parents, Ghanaian parents there, and talked to them about what does it mean to parent for liberation and, like, what are their concerns, because I was trying to understand if they had similar struggles. And although our struggles are similar, they're not the same, because, as you said, they're not, they are living in a more communal context, right? And they are, their relationship to their children felt a little different. It wasn't as impacted by the white supremacy that we're raising our children up under. Like, there is a heightened level of exhaustion placed on us here in the States because of the added burden that we carry around being Black in this country of white supremacy. Like, you're more afraid, our cortisol levels are high, we got more stress, our bodies are weathering 10 years quicker, where our bodies are aging 10 years quicker. They say that Black don't crack on the outside, but on the inside, our bodies are weathering because of stress-related, race-related stress, right? So all of that adds to the burden here and there that didn't exist. Also, the relationship to children just felt different. Children were sacred. They're not like how we're like, children are meant to be seen and not heard. Children are meant to sit still. All that U.S. westernized way of parenting didn't necessarily show up in the same way there. And similar to what you were saying, like, oh, the child is a part of the community. And so I remember talking, and I, you know, everywhere I went, I was like, so tell me about what's the role of children and how do children, you know, and they would be like, children are meant to be at the table. Like, as you're having the discussion, as you're cooking, as you're doing what you're doing, children should be present so they can learn. How do they learn if they're not present? And we're so, it's so different here where we're like, oh, children need to stay in a children's place. And this is a grown folks conversation. Like, all that narrative is like, how will they learn if we don't teach? Like, they are a part of the community. Like, they are the future. So how do we invest in them early? And so it's just to see, like, I think there is something to going outside of the U.S. context to see, one, how relationships exist in other places, how community is built in other places, to also see how the parent-child relationship is in other places. And I'm not to say, like, oh, my gosh, they're so much better. It's not a comparison. It's just, like, you can learn so much and reconnect to our ancestral ways of being. And that provides a sense of, I feel like that contributes to my resilience. That contributed to my feeling of, like, oh, I don't have to continue to live up to white supremacy standards, because I now can see, like you said, removing the veil or removing the scales from my eye is like, oh, I was looking at everything like I had to fit and fight within this capitalist white supremacist structure. And it's like, actually, we don't have to. And I know you said, like, there are folks who are trying to build these communities and containers in the U.S. And, like, they're like these little, not little to minimize them, but like these transformative communities. And I think about the book that we were both reading by Mia Birdsong, How We Show Up. Shout out to Mia Birdsong. She's on episode something 13, like a long time ago. and so just like there are folks who are trying to explore what that could look like here. And I think that is some of the work that you are interested in doing here as well, right? Just talk a little bit about how you're doing that here. You're also doing that by taking folks to outside of this country to experience what that means. So you want to talk a little about the upcoming retreat?
Yes.
Okay.
A big part of what I do as a healing justice practitioner and a person who is deeply committed to reclaiming our ancient traditions and building them into our futures is that I try to, and oftentimes do a pretty decent job, co-create immersive sanctuary spaces and experiences where people get to reconnect with the aspects of our humanity, of our history, of our legacies that actually can get us free and keep us free. And what that looks like on an international level is getting people on flights, onto planes, and collectively creating collective experiences for us in different cultural contexts outside of the United States, but particularly Black cultural contexts. Because anybody could go to different regions around the world. There's plenty of like cool vacations that you could probably book on JetBlue tomorrow. But when you get there, will you find the Black people? And will you see how Black culture actually operates? And will you see our ancient traditions in practice, keeping those people alive and giving them the capacity to thrive and continue raising up these really brilliant human beings? So part of what I do is I kind of like excavate these different regions and locations to find where the Black people at and where are our traditions still alive and keeping our people not just in a survival space, but actually in an interdependent and thriving space. So the retreats that I co-curate and co-create offer people an opportunity to leave the United States, to go someplace where they can have true rest. So we are in environments that also offer a sanctuary vibe and sanctuary energy. You're surrounded by trees, you're surrounded by the natural elements that we don't actually get to have a lot of access to here in the United States. So the first thing is like giving people space to rest. And then that begins to crack open the possibility of having deeply healing experiences, deeply healing conversations. And then inside of the experience, you are introduced to opportunities to have immersive experiences, to learn more about the different cultures, to have the similar kind of conversations like Trina was saying, like talk to other people about what their parenting looks like and how it is for them and their lived reality. But even more importantly, you get to build intimacy with other Black people, which is like an anomaly right now in this country. It's like a Herculean feat for Black people to create new relationships and allow or be able to bask and enjoy the gift of intimacy inside of them. And there's something about going away together, traveling together. Y'all remember camp from when you were little kids? All of a sudden, those people were your best friends, your camp friends.
For a week.
You had a
BFS
had a special,
for life.
But I mean, you had a special bond with them that was created by the fact that y'all were in the same place and the same experience. You couldn't get out, so your parents came and got you, you know? So going away with a group of people, you know, creates a sense of intimacy that wouldn't otherwise be available here, and also gives people a chance to like believe in connection and believe in what happens when Black people put their minds and their hearts together around their freedom and their liberation. So we have a retreat like that coming up in November.
Pew, 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 pew.
Yes, we're going to Costa Rica, and we're going to be in Puerto Viejo, just outside of Limón. Limón is the Blackest part of Costa Rica. We're going to be in a beautiful retreat, jungle retreat area where people get to stay in bungalows. People can sleep under the stars if they want to sleep under the stars. I'll be offering different types of yoga and mindfulness movement practices. There'll be daily affirmations. There's going to be ritual and offerings. And all of the local food, the organic good. We're going to go, you know, we're going to do a lot of some of the touristy fun things like jump off of waterfalls and, go and see like the spaces where people get to take the good photos for the gram. We still get to have a taste of that too. And also we have the gift of having a consultant who is a Costa Rican Black trans person who's also going to hook us up with the nightlife. You know, where our cutie community is at in Black Costa Rica, which is also such a powerful gift and offering and necessary tool for us. So that's what's coming up in November. We're going to Ghana in 2024, so stay tuned. You already heard Trina and I talking about the many gifts that we got from our journeys to Ghana. And we're exploring other locations so that we can continue this work. I've done it in Puerto Rico, I've done it in Mexico, and I've done it in domestic contexts as well. So on a smaller scale, what that looks like is like bringing people together to have those kind of experiences in local realities. Right now, we're going to be co-creating that inside of the innovation lab that P4L is doing, bringing Black parents together who are doing, to me, one of the most incredible tools and weapons that we have in dismantling these systems, which is innovating, which is like such a Black thing and is literally like the way you describe Black parenting. Like, there's just one and the same, constant innovation. So inside of the innovation lab is going to be a lot of space and a lot of ritual and practice and offering for us to be in communion, for us to be in ritual, for us to be in connection, and for us to reclaim our traditions so that we can have legacies that are fortified and in honor and in reverence of our ancestors and all that they did before we were snatched and brought here.
Okay, listen, if that didn't make y'all want to sign up for the retreat in November, I don't know what to tell you, because it's going to be litty, litty, litty in the city. But I know for me as a mom, every time I'm about to do something that's just for Trina, like Trina, the individual, Trina, the woman, Trina, the human, there's this like wave of guilt of like, oh, can I do this thing for me? Like, what happens if my child needs me? Or what, you know, like, oh, does that make me a bad mom if I miss his baseball game because it's his final baseball game of the season that's happening that same weekend, or I'm going to not be there for this very important thing for his life? And what do you say to people like me who are thinking about contemplating, like, sacrificing ourselves because we want to be a super mom? Or super wife, right, or super sister, or super daughter, but we don't know how to be super for ourselves. What do you say to people like me? say it. I need to hear it. I need to book my flight.
What I say is that you're actually doing yourself a disservice as a parent by showing up from a place of depletion and by denying yourself these opportunities to be restored and renewed, and that Black children deserve the best of us. Black children deserve versions of us that have access to healing. Black children deserve their legacies to have our healing woven into them. And so when we take these opportunities, we're doing it for them. That is our Black parenting. And if you need to, bring your kid with you. I'm bringing my babies. You know, if it feels like too brain-breaking to go and create this experience and leave them behind, so to speak, which we know we're never actually doing. We're never, our babies are always, we're parenting from wherever we are. So
literally.
But if you need to, bring them with you, but even more so, demonstrate to them, educate them, show them a new legacy where Black moms are healing, where Black moms are well, where Black moms are in relationship with other Black moms in ways that support you, young person. Like, my time that I spent with this Black mother meant that we got woven into our future, and give them the capacity to actually appreciate that work so that they can continue that legacy reclamation and transformation, and we can make our way back, kakra kakra, as they say in Ghana, little by little.
Okay, thanks. That gives me a little bit of relief. I'm doing this for him, but I want to just do it for me. And I think that's the hard part. Like, yes, by doing it for me, I'm doing it for him. But like, why can't we consider it selfish to just be like, I'm doing this because this is what I need. This is what I want. It's for me. And it's okay for us to have that.
If you were to make an invoice right now of all the emotional, physical, mental, spiritual labor that you have done as a parent and the amount that you are owed for that work, then I think it might be easy for you to say, I'm owed this time. And be claiming my time.
Not you doing it because I'm a Capricorn and be always thinking about finance.
Sometimes you have to put it in the black and white. Go ahead and make an invoice, Trina, because you don't even have enough space in your Excel sheet.
I was like, that invoice, gazillions of dollars in debt. Somebody owed me. Who? And then I'm going to want to send it to somebody. So
then that's another project that we can get to. That's hopefully bringing all these Black parents together will get us to a place where we can make a really clear reparations demand so that we can continue this work and there's no guilt attached to it and no limitation or restriction. We could just get on our plane, bring our babies, or have someone else looking out for our babies so that we can go and take care of our well-being and our future and our past, right? Because we're also doing it for our ancestors.
Yes. Yes, we're avenging the suffering of our ancestors. Yes. This was such a good talk. Is there anything else you want to talk about, or maybe close us out with something?
Yeah, I think I want to close with gratitude, Trina. I think part of what liberated me back into the space of parenting, because I actually was a parent. I was a pre-adoptive parent in 2014 through 2016, and I had a failed adoption. And that broke me in a way that made it really hard for me to see Black parenting as a site of possibility. And meeting you for the first time and witnessing your journey and your walk as a parent and the way in which you invite other Black parents into a liberated space for parenting, into a liberated relationship and love with their child, with their children, it awoke something in me. It made it so that I wanted to pay attention to what parents are doing in a way that I hadn't been able to for a really long time. So thank you for putting certain things in people's faces, for putting certain conversations on the table, for making space for other parents to lift the veil, because it is truly liberating and it is actually gifting us something back that our ancestors really want us to have. So I want to offer gratitude to you, and gratitude to all the Black parents who are invested in this conversation and who are invested in their humanity. I want all of us to be whole. Y'all, let's get free and let our freedom contain wholeness and wellness. It's no small feat, but we can do it.
We can do it. Listen, thank you for closing with gratitude and with hope. Yeah, that means a lot. It warms my heart. I did not know about your past parenting experience, and but I do know the journey that you were on to become a Mama G. So I'm so honored that you are on this journey with me. You know, you've been there since I met you. I don't know how many years ago it was, but we've been rocking. We've been rocking and rolling. And now I'll have you in this P4L space. So that's really nice. It's really nice to have you in this space.
And I love it. I love it. I'll be trying to stretch and expand into all of the different corners of the P4L constellation, because y'all is intergalactic planetary stardust and magic over here. Yes.
And on that note, I'm going to close out this episode. Thank you for joining me. Where can folks find out about your retreat? What's your website? Your main website.
My main website is my name, naimaefia.com, NAIMAHEFIA.com. And the website, or the link that they could follow for the retreat, which has hella information, including like basically the full scope of our itinerary. I had to look it up, y'all, because the way my relationship to technology is set up, it's a bit.ly. So let me give y'all a bit.ly.
Oh, okay. I was like, I know you can get it from your main page, because I was on your page today.
It's bit.ly/re-imagine-legacy, because that's what the retreat is about. And hopefully we'll invite everyone into, and they'll leave with a reimagined legacy for their Black parenting and their children and their children's children.
Ashe. Thank you for listening to this episode of Parenting for Liberation. I hope something on this episode will inspire you on your parenting journey. Please like us on all social media at Parenting for Liberation. Until next time, let's get free, y'all.